How do you do? Jen and Cam feel it would be unkind to present this program without a friendly word of warning. We are about to unfold our true crime podcast, a podcast of lifelong friends who seek to examine crimes which were committed without reckoning upon God. The discussion will be frank, and the subject matter will be of a grim and violent nature. I think it will thrill you. It might even horrify you. So, if there are young children listening, or if you feel unwilling to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to... Well, we've warned you.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
What's going on?
Oh, not much. Summer is here.
Summer is here.
The pool is open.
I know.
And we are ready to have a great summer.
I hope so. I do. Are you guys going anywhere this summer? Anywhere fun?
Yes. Thank God we're not going to Florida. No offense to Florida, but I'm tired of going out to the parks down there. But this time we are heading east. We are going to drive and stay a few days in Philly.
Mm.
We're also going to go to Cedar Point, I think it is. We're going to the amusement park up there. And then we are going to Williamsburg in Virginia, and we are going to Busch Gardens there. Yes, my family loves amusement parks. No, I do not like them.
But why not? They're so cheap. And the food's great.
I know. It's just my kids and my husband love them, so I just tag along and bring a book.
Mm-mm-mm. I am babysitting a puppy this weekend, and it was a little rough start getting the recording going. I know
a little rough start, yes.
Attest to that, because she's a little angel. She misses her mommy. Then my daughter left, and then that threw, you know, then she got all wired up about that. But right now she's at my feet, and she is precious.
Hopefully we won't have any more outbreaks, but nope. I'm sure she'll be quiet.
I don't think we will.
And so if you hear them, if you hear the puppy in the background, it's all good.
That is correct. Speaking of in the background, are you ready for our story?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Today's case takes us to our very own backyard. See what I did there? I tied in the...
Woo!
See what I did there? And by backyard, I do mean backyard, as in Herculaneum, Missouri.
Ooh.
Right? Mark Tim Todd was raised in Herculaneum, and it was right away that everyone knew Tim was going to be a standout in athletics. His dedication and his physique helped him become a stellar athlete. At 6'7", that's right, 6'7", and 230 pounds, it was no shock that he would be so successful in all sports that he was voted most talented his senior year, as well as most handsome. Now, every boy wanted to be him, and every girl wanted to be with him. Tim had the world in his hands, but when his father died of a massive heart attack while Tim was still in high school, things started to change for the young man. Tim lost his father and his best friend, and he was determined to take better care of himself than ever before. It was here that Tim started working out and building his body into a work of art. The 80s fitness craze was still on the horizon, so Tim was a little bit ahead of the curve.
Now, his name is Tim Tam. That's who I thought of as the minute you said it.
Tim Todd.
Okay. Tim Tam's a candy bar.
It is? Never heard of it.
But not an American candy bar, but yes.
Okay, I got you. I was going to say. After college, Tim decided to return home and lay down roots in Festus, Missouri, which is only about 5 miles south of Herculaneum. Now, at 21 years old, Tim decides to work as a police officer within the Festus Police Department. His large size was imposing, but his charisma and outgoing personality made him a local town favorite. Everyone who knew Tim liked him, and so it was no different with his boss, Police Chief Bill Pagano. Now, Chief Pagano was a well-known figure around Festus, especially because he had become chief at just 27 years old, making him the youngest police chief in the state at the time. He was a stout man who always had a cigar in his mouth. He was well-known throughout Jefferson County, and he had a no-nonsense work ethic. He was referred to as the boss hog of Jefferson County. He was a big deal, or at least he thought so. During an interview with a local paper, he bragged that he had the most influence over anyone in Jefferson County. He drove really nice cars and walked around town in really expensive suits, and he was always flashy, to say the least. He'd always carry a big wad of cash, even if it was just $1 bills, you know, to make him look like he had a lot of money, so he'd flip out that money when they went out to eat or whatever. Chief Pagano hired Tim Todd, and the two of them became close immediately. It was more of a father-son relationship than a boss-employee relationship. Tim Todd would be the face of the force, and his big presence was just what Pagano wanted and needed. A few years after Tim joined the force, Pagano was dipping his hands in other ventures, shall we say. He wanted to get into the private security business, and he started a company named Scientific Security Corporation. At the age of 31, Pagano made Tim the COO of his new company, and the two became even closer. Tim was doing better financially and professionally than he'd ever dreamed of, and he too wanted to dip his hands into new ventures. Tim, always the athlete, took care of himself by staying fit, so when an opportunity became available in the form of an empty strip mall store, he took a chance and snapped up the building. Tim was about to get into what was huge in the 80s, the fitness craze, Jane Fonda. He opened his own gym, calling it Mid-America Health and Racquetball Club. Tim was at the peak of fitness, and his finances were the best they'd ever been. Tim Todd was on top of the world doing what he loved and making a lot of money while doing it. His life was good, but it was about to get even better. She was an aerobics instructor. Remember aerobics instructors? Woo! She was an aerobics instructor by the name of Stephanie. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Pagano. That's right.
Oh,
she
yeah.
is the daughter of his employer and friend, Bill Pagano. Stephanie also happens to be just 17 years old.
Now, uh-oh.
Yeah, remind you, he's 31, actually, 31. The two fell hard and fast, and even though the age difference seemed a lot at the time, love knows no limits, Jen. We know that, right? No limits.
It is. It's a lot at this time, too.
Sure is. You may think Bill might not be happy about all this, but oh, he is happy as a clam about it. Tim and Stephanie's relationship only cements the relationship with Bill. Tim is a great catch for Stephanie, and Bill is thrilled about the idea of one day being able to call Tim his son-in-law. Everyone is truly ecstatic about the relationship. Everyone except Tim's wife and two kids. Yes, Tim is married to his high school sweetheart, Patty, and has been for years. The couple were voted best looking in their high school yearbook, and what no one knew at that time was that Patty was actually pregnant with their first child in that very same yearbook photo. The couple would get married and continue to raise a family. They were living the American dream, complete with an affair on the side, which, you know, American dream too, for some.
If you say so.
I'm not saying those people don't, you know what I mean. Tim and Stephanie were less than discreet when it came to the relationship. Not only did they work together at the gym, but Stephanie worked alongside Tim at her dad's security firm. It was pretty much an open secret with everyone, even Patty. Patty confronted Tim and Tim admitted it. Tim told Patty and the kids that he would break it off with Stephanie immediately. You know, that didn't happen because otherwise we wouldn't be doing this podcast. Stephanie found her man, and she was not going to let him go. And since she's a teenager, I'm sure she was madly in love, puppy love, with him. In fact, Stephanie wanted Tim to break it off with Patty and marry her. She was putting a lot of pressure on Tim, big time, and Tim was feeling it. Now, this is his boss's daughter, after all, so this is also his connection to finances, job, career. So Tim did what he thought he needed to do, and he asked Patty for a divorce. And Tim and Stephanie lived happily ever after. Just kidding.
Yeah, I was going to say that. That ain't happening since we're talking about it.
Nope, it's not happening. It's a true crime podcast, after all. It's the spring of 1990, and Tim holds a meeting with Bill Pagano. Now, maybe this was just Bill being a man who believed in security and safety, or maybe Bill sensed something was about to happen. But Bill decides at that moment to start secretly taping all his meetings and phone calls with his dear friend, Tim. guess it was a smart move because what Tim would say during one of those meetings was shocking, to say the least. Tim didn't want to divorce Patty. No, of course not. Instead, he wanted to hire a hitman to kill her, and he wanted his boss and mentor, Bill Picano, to help him find somebody to do it. Tim wanted to have Patty killed, collect the insurance policy, which would have been about $204,000 in today's market, and then raise both of their children and live happily ever after. Seems totally normal, mm-hmm. right? Tim, however, wanted to make sure this was an accident so that he could double the insurance. Now, mm-hmm. Of course.
Well, it's always easier to plan a murder than to just divorce someone.
Thank you. I think I say that a little bit later. On the tape, you can hear Bill sort of trying to talk Tim out of it, but then he agrees to do this for him. Tim goes home after their meeting, and he is confronted once again by Patty, who knows that Tim has not yet broken it off with Stephanie, and he demands he do it. Tim agrees, once again, but little does Patty know that Tim not only won't be breaking up with Stephanie, but he is actively trying to hire a hitman to take her out of the picture. Divorce, people, one word. D-I-V-O-R-C-E.
Mm-hmm.
Tammy Wynette. It's a lot easier.
Yep.
Tim once again goes to Bill to beg him to hurry this along. Bill again records the conversation. And Bill tells Tim that the hitman wants $5,000 up front. That seems like such little money to kill somebody, you know?
It would take a hell of a lot of money. Maybe over $1 million for me to kill somebody. Seriously.
That's it? I don't know, because you got to weigh that about going to jail and all that.
But I wouldn't do it for petty. I mean, a couple $100,000 is just petty cash. You know what I mean? That's not worth it at all.
But $1 million's not that much anymore. You know, like you buy a house for $1 million, and sometimes, depending on where it is, it's not even that nice. Different time, Jen. On March 22nd, Tim Todd went to the bank and withdrew $5,000 in cash, wrote a check made out to Cash, and the teller remembered him and the transaction. Now, of course, if you're 6'7" and you come into a bank with a check made out to Cash in the tiny town of Festus, Missouri, I think most people are going to remember that. But hey, what do I know, right? I was fired from being a bank teller, the only job I was ever fired from. I'm not real good with money, let's be honest.
I'm not real good with any having it, counting it, giving it away. I'm not good with it.
I'm really good at wanting it. Does that count for anything?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tim then decides he's going to drive over and meet with Bill and give him the $5,000 cash. Now, the deal is underway, and, you know, it's too late to change your mind and get a refund. You're going to give a hitman $5,000. You can't say, you know what? You know what, Killer Bob? I changed my mind. I need that money back. That's not going to happen. So at this point, Bill tells Tim that he wants his daughter and Tim to wait a little bit to be together after Patty's killed because, you know, it's a small town and Stephanie's kind of young. She's got some schooling to get out of the way. And frankly, this is going to draw a lot of attention on them, but also the town. Mm-hmm. It's an unusual thing.
Mm-hmm.
Bill and Tim then discuss when and how they should get this done. Pagano asked Tim if he has any thoughts on it and wonders if Patty has ever talked about maybe killing herself. And Tim said, well, yeah, you know, she's brought it up a couple times. So they suggest maybe that they could put that into play. Picano then asks about steps. Do you have steps in your house? If so, do you know how many? Are they steep enough? Say if Patty took a tumble that it would be deadly. Could she break her neck?
Just need an owl. Okay.
And another idea that was brought up, and this is just, I don't even know what to say, brutal. And I mean, you're killing somebody is cruel enough, but this is just terrible. Picano suggests maybe they know that Patty likes to use the tanning bed at the gym. That's right. At the gym, and they somehow, yes, fix her in it, lock her in it, and then basically she would die from being burned alive via the tanning bed. They're all
horrible.
Yeah, that this is the wife of, you could hate her. She's still your children's mother. So at one time you kind of liked her. Bill and Tim are still tossing around ideas about how this is going to go down. But one thing was for sure. Pagano tells Tim that they need to make sure the kids are not around for this. And Tim has the perfect idea. There's a bodybuilding competition in Cape Girardeau, and he had already planned to take both the kids with him, and this would be his built-in alibi. Tim could, you know, he's out of town. He couldn't have had a single thing to do with his wife's untimely death since he was with the kids out of town at the bodybuilding competition. The plan was now in play. It was too late to go back. Both men were going to be complicit in causing the death of Patty Todd. It is March 26, 1990, when a call comes into 911 Jefferson County Sheriff's Department. The man on the line says he needs some help because there's been shots fired. The dispatcher asks the man if he needs an ambulance. Should we send an ambulance to the scene? The man stammers as he says he doesn't think the ambulance would do any good as it was too late. The man gives the address of the emergency and help is sent immediately. When the sheriffs arrive to the location, they know immediately who lives here, former police chief Bill Pagano. What they do not yet know is what happened. They approach the house and they notice a body on the cold concrete of the garage floor that appears to be deceased. There's blood around the upper part of the torso and what looks to be a gunshot blast to the person's face. Upon closer inspection, the sheriff knows who it is, and it is not Patty Todd, but Tim Todd. Tim Todd is dead on Bill Picano's garage floor.
Switch it.
Switch it up. This was not the plan that Tim and Bill had come up with, or at least not the...
I should hope not.
Not the person that was supposed to be dead. Now investigators need to figure out just what happened on that Missouri spring day. Who would have killed Tim Todd and why? Did Patty finally have enough of his cheating ways and take him out? Did his teen lover Stephanie get tired of waiting and ended the affair oh so brutally? Tim had made a few enemies along the way, but would anybody really want him dead? The answer's no to all that. Investigators began to work the case and learn from people at the gym that the day before Tim was murdered, he and Stephanie got into it at the gym. She was yelling and screaming at him, and this was seen by more than just a few people. As they are starting to put pressure on Stephanie, the case takes a turn. The killer steps up and admits that they are the one who killed Tim Todd, and it is none other than his mentor and father-like figure in his life, Bill Pagano. He simply told authorities, quote, "I had to kill his ass," end quote. Okay, really?
Nice.
While Bill admits he did it, he tells them that he had to, and it was not murder, but self-defense. Bill would say that Tim Todd came to him weeks ago and wanted to hire a hitman to kill his wife, and he can prove it as he has been secretly recording their meetings and phone calls all this time. Okay, that's pretty good for you, Bill, I guess. Maybe that was the plan. Bill said that he was just playing along with all of this, and the end goal was to get him to a psych hospital. He wanted to get him some mental help. Bill claimed that Tim had been using steroids and that this must have caused him to behave irrationally. Bill had never planned to actually kill Patty. It was all a ruse. Bill wanted to keep their meetings recorded, not only for proof that Tim wanted this to happen, but, you know, just in case Tim really went off the deep end and would kill Bill, there would be proof there. Investigators are intrigued, but they need to hear the rest of the story. Bill goes on to tell them that he had called Tim and said he needed to set up a meeting with Tim and the hitman. He would tell Tim the hitman was coming to Bill's house to meet him, and the three of them would finalize the plan, or so Tim thought. Tim arrives, and Bill tried to make a citizen's arrest. Bill claims Tim was not having it, and Tim started to freak out. In fear for his life, Bill Pagano takes out a shotgun and shoots Tim twice in the head. Bill was visibly upset and crying as he detailed the scene for officers. To further back up his story, Tim had arrived with a photo of Patty for the hitman. Now, you see, earlier, Bill had asked Tim to bring a photo so that the hitman would definitely know what Patty looked like while making the hit and not to make, accidentally murder somebody who looked like Patty, I suppose. Right
okay.
Now, everything's kind of lining up, right? Sort of. Next to Tim's lifeless body was a revolver, which made Bill's story believable to investigators. Officers at the scene felt confident that the story played out and the sheriff agreed. Seems like a pretty clear-cut case of self-defense. But there's just one thing that sort of disputes that theory. You see, when the medical examiner got the body and was making the report, he noted the bullet holes in his head. And yes, there were two of them, as they had stated earlier. But what the medical examiner discovered was that the exit wound was in the front of his head. meaning the entry wound was in the back of his head. That was the first shot. Tim Todd was shot first in the back of the head, away from the killer. The second shot was to his face, as he was already on the ground. Tim Todd was not shot in self-defense, as he was not even facing the killer. Tim Todd was murdered.
That's what it sounds like.
There is a gun found next to Tim, and Bill claimed this was self-defense, remember? But when Tim's fingerprints were not found on the gun, anywhere on the gun, Bill, well, he kind of admits that, you know, he never really saw Tim have a gun, or for that matter, he never really saw Tim point a gun at him. And in fact, you know, Tim never even fired a gun that day. There was no gun fired. Not exactly self-defense.
No, I wouldn't think so. I think somebody's lying.
Uh-huh.
Dirty, rotten liars.
Somebody's got pants on fire. Mm-hmm. Next up for discussion is the recorded conversations that Bill made of Tim. Now, if Bill was so worried about Tim and his distress and his mental health, all of the meetings that you've had so far, wouldn't this meeting, the one where you actually give the hitman money and you actually give him a photo of Patty, I mean, this is it. Once this is done, it's done. This would be the one meeting, I would think, that you would most definitely want to record. Am I right?
I would think so, yeah.
Well, this was the one meeting that he did not choose to record. He did not record this meeting, but he had recorded every single thing else. And
it's kind of convenient for him, isn't it?
It is a little bit, isn't it? Finally, there is what Patty, Tim's still very much alive, thank goodness, wife, told police. She informs officers that it was Tim who was actually fearful of Bill Pagano because Bill was pressuring Tim into marrying his daughter or else. As in, you marry Stephanie, or I'm going to kill you. You're going to die. That's your choices. You're going to leave your wife and you're going to marry my daughter, or you're going to die. Tim, in fact, on the very day he was killed, told Patty that Bill had threatened him. And Patty believed at this point that Tim was just trying to buy some time until he and Patty and the kids could escape from the clutches of Bill. Pretty interesting. All of these pretty good theories, you know, you just never know. Everything's playing out. The investigation. A little bit after this, a young girl came forward and told officers that she saw Bill Pagano yelling at Tim and even shoving him and screaming curse words at him. Now, after the fight, she described Tim as just resigning himself to it. So he's kind of slumped over, just over it. He's not fighting back. He's not arguing. I guess Bill was belittling him, however you want to say it. And Tim just kind of gave up. Perhaps both men are over all of this that's going on. The affair, the lies, the broken promises, the embarrassment of it all. You know, Bill Pagano had kept going around town telling everybody that Tim was going to be a son-in-law and was going to marry his precious little princess daughter, Stephanie. And so maybe that was just too much for him, the embarrassment of it all not happening.
I don't think I'd kill a man just to save myself from embarrassment.
I'm glad you think that, Jen. Neither would I. But then again, we're pretty sane. I mean, I think. Not totally,
I guess.
But.
Hey, Cam, guess what? Z-Man Games sent us a game to review, and I absolutely love it.
That sounds so cool. What's the name of it?
Well, it's a card game by the name of Love Letters. And basically, the gist of the game is you need to try to get a love letter to the princess.
Is it hard to learn?
Oh, no, it maybe takes like 3 minutes to learn or just to get the hang of it. And the best part is, even though it's simple to learn to play the game, you kind of have to use strategic gameplay to win. And the best part of this whole game, which I love, is it only takes 20 minutes to play a game. And the fact it comes in like this little velvet pouch, so it's portable. You could play it anywhere.
Portable? That sounds like a great game to take on the family vacation this summer.
For all our listeners, Love Letters, it's an easy game to find. You can just go to your local Target, game store, or just go on zmangames.com and purchase your card game for $11.99. Thanks, Z-Man Games.
Everyone around town knew that Bill Pagano, and they knew what he was like, and I guess the best way you can say it is not all were fans, even though he liked to think everybody loved him. He was a man who, shall we say, was a bit too big for his britches. He knew what he wanted, and he would not stop to get it. People had told investigators that Bill was dangerous and he had a temper and a reputation. But then it all comes together as it always does.
Mm-hmm.
Authorities stumbled on a motive as old as time. It seems that Bill Pagano had taken out
a life insurance policy.
Oh, you'd think it'd be just one, Jen.
Come here. Oh, really?
Yes. You see, he had taken out, shall we say, several life insurance policies on Tim Todd. So many, in fact, that they were well over worth, you ready? $1.5 million.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
Bill Pagano is arrested and charged with first-degree murder and armed criminal action in April of 1990. The trial would last 4 weeks and end with the jury finding Bill Pagano guilty of second-degree murder, which is a little odd, I would think. I believe the jury, this is just me theorizing, with first degree, you have to have it premeditated and all of that. And they couldn't.
Yeah, it's
they
couldn't easier to get a conviction on a second.
Definitely do that. Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the trial.
Casey Anthony would have been convicted if it would have been second degree and not first degree.
So, or even manslaughter. Something. Exactly. Anything. Bill was sentenced to 23 years in prison for killing the man who he once referred to as son. Now, appeals were filed and Bill Pagano was out on bail, and he was able to live his best life at home while he waited for the appeals to take place. And this
of course
was
he did.
This was an additional 3 years. Coming, going out to eat, you know, doing what he wanted to do. Finally, after 3 years, the court did decide that Bill Pagano was guilty and should serve his time. In 1994, ding, 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 his freedom is up, and he would have to report to prison. Officers drive out to his house. They show up at the front door, ring the doorbell. Bill answers. He's polite. He's nice. I mean, they all know each other. You know, he was police chief at one time. He invites the officers in as they're standing in the living room. He said, you know what? I just want to go change clothes because this will be the last time that I can, like, feel, I guess, fresh or whatever.
I know how this is going.
Yep. He excuses himself.
Brock, 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 brock.
He excuses himself, goes back into his back bedroom where he then put a shotgun to his head and shot himself. He killed himself, never to spend a single day in prison.
Yep.
So that is the story of Bill and Tim. And it didn't end well for anybody. Let's be honest.
No.
So
wow.
I had never, and you know, this is like in our own backyard. I've never heard of the story. And I was just kind of flabbergasted because, I don't know, I can totally see how a small town, you know, police officer rises to police chief. He is a little bit too big for his britches and he just kind of wants what he wants when he wants it. It's the same thing we always say. I would like to know at what point in his mind he decided to do that, cross the line and actually murder somebody he cared about, which would be Tim, under the ruse of it being his wife and the, you know, you're going to marry my daughter kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, was it his daughter like the big daddy's girl that I will do anything for my daughter? And
oh, I'm sure
that kind
sure.
of thing.
I'm sure,
you know, and
I'm sure.
Oh, daddy, I can't live without him. I love him. That kind of thing.
I would think so. But I'd still my daughter is 16. If she came home and told me she was dating a 30-year-old. Oh, nope.
Mm-mm.
I would put her in a dog crate in the basement. Seriously.
And I'm sure he was a narcissist. And oh. But still the whole fact to save face of, well, I told everybody you were going to do this, so you have to do this. And to go as far as to put a bullet in a guy's head.
But then he's also a police chief. He should have known that you can't shoot somebody in the back of the head and claim that it was self-defense. You know, it's like they're running away from you and you shoot them.
Mm-hmm.
No. So that's the case, Jen. However, I did want to talk about two movies I watched this weekend, and I was delighted with both of them. I got to tell you, honestly. The first one is called The Dry with Eric Bana, and it is an Australian murder mystery. I loved it. I thought it was really, really good, really well done. And it was kind of fun to see Eric because, you know, he is a native Australian hottie, to say the least. And to see him with his own accent, I thought that was kind of cool because he's
usually... What was it called again?
The Dry. Dry. Like, okay. You know, it was really good. And then the other one I watched is with
Denzel. Now, is that a new movie?
They're both brand new. I rented them. I'm going to be honest. But I treated myself. I thought I deserved it this weekend because it's...
Yeah. No, I think it's great.
Here's the other one you need to watch. The Little Things with Denzel Washington and Malik... Ooh, I always forget how to say his last name. You know, the guy that played Freddie Mercury, Malik Ramick? Yes, that Rant. That. I don't know how to say his name, but those two.
He's cute.
And let me just say, another murder mystery. Really good. Like, both of them kept my attention. Really good. And let me just add to that one, and I don't want to say it for anybody. One of the characters in the Denzel movie called The Little Things, which I love because I always say that. Like, that's one of my stupid phrases that, you know, Jan, it's the little things. And I usually say that sarcastically. And that's sort of how this plays out in this, The Little Things. But the character in there, I kept going, he kind of looks like somebody. And I don't want to say who it is because I don't. But see, you're going to know it anyway. I watched it and then I clicked on, you know, Amazon always puts the characters' names, like their real names and who they're playing. So like during watching it, you can kind of click on it and you'll see. Well, I was looking up somebody else and it pops up and I'm like, no way, is that him? Because the funny thing is as I was watching it, I was like, that character really looks like this
actor. Just say it.
I don't want to ruin it because I like other people to watch it and see. It's good. I think you should watch it.
I just don't like Denzel. I can't because I can't get over it. I can't get over the fact that I don't like him.
How do you not like him?
I don't like him.
I'm shocked. I do. I like him. I think he's a good actor. No. Anyway, Tom Hanks?
No.
Come on. Who doesn't like Tom Hanks? He's America's sweetheart.
Tom Hanks has grown on me, and I didn't like him because he was an American sweetheart. At one point, I loved him in Bosom Buddies. I loved Bosom Buddies. But he started to be in every damn movie. I was oversaturated with Bill Hanks, or Tom Hanks, listen to me, with Tom Hanks. It got to the point where it's like I would refuse to watch a movie just because Tom Hanks was in it. It would be like listening to a song over and over and over again, and you could not escape that song.
I don't know if we can be friends anymore.
An unpopular opinion, hated Forrest Gump.
I know you did. I wasn't even going to bring it up.
Burning passion.
I love Forrest Gump.
Burning passion.
That's
but
a timeless
now,
classic.
Tom Hanks, I like him now. We have a little distance between us now. He's not in every movie that ever walked.
I thought I knew you.
Across the stage.
I thought we were friends.
Yeah, no,
I don't even know what to say. All right,
no,
what did you
now. He's fine.
I met Tom Hanks, and let me say, not only did I meet Tom Hanks, I spent an entire day and night with him. Wait, that sounded wrong. I'm sorry. Evening, like an event. Let's put it that way. Okay, rewind. Anyway, one of the nicest people I've ever met my whole life. He was just like,
oh yeah.
But he really was super nice. So that maybe that's like, I love him too because of that. Because not every actor's nice, let me tell you. Thomas Gibson, I'm talking about you.
No, and I know. And besides all the wackadoo stuff that's come out about Tom Hanks lately that is untrue, you really don't hear anything bad about him.
And he's still married to
You know what I mean? Everybody has a nice thing to say. You know?
Yeah, I got you. What do you got to say? What do you want to talk about?
I wanted to talk about the murder that happened in Florida with the 14-year-old boy stabbing the 13-year-old girl 114 times.
Terrible. And smiling in the back of the cop car.
And then sending out a Snapchat that says, hey, has anybody seen Tristan?
He definitely had
seriously,
mental issues.
On my Facebook page, there's a big debate going about they don't feel that he should be charged as an adult. They think feel that since he's 14, he should be tried as a juvenile.
Well,
now she was stabbed 114 times.
Mm-hmm.
49 of those times were defensive wounds.
Mm-hmm.
Like she was stabbed in the hands, her arms, her head. Yeah, and he had even told his friends he wanted to kill somebody, so it was premeditated. It might not have been for her. The poor girl's name is Tristan Bailey. But
I have struggles with that because I do. That is one of the, I don't want to say pet causes, but juveniles and being, I would need to know more about the case, I think, to make an educated thing of what I think. However, I do think a lot of times, you know, it's where do you cross the line? So he did this, so you're going to treat him like an adult, but is that any different than another 13-year-old? You know, stabbing somebody once. I mean, it's still, do you see what I'm saying? Like, you're still, there's
still. Well, this was premeditated.
Not for her, though, necessarily.
This was premeditated.
He was just wanting to kill somebody. It could have been. It could have been his dad.
No, but it was premeditated. He wanted to do it. So it wasn't, he had the opportunity. So that's, he took it.
At 13, I don't think that they will try him as an adult.
No, they are charging with him as an adult. I believe it. He's 14.
Okay. We'll
supposedly
see.
He doesn't have a very good family life, or his dad was abusive from what
a lot
I've
of people
read.
Don't doesn't make you killers.
I know.
But I get it. I mean, I get how certain people are stronger.
But then
people.
You have to think, I struggle with this because one, our jail system is more of a punishment and not like the rehabbing. Not like everybody says, oh, they go here to rehabilitate them. We're going to rehabilitate them. No, we don't. No, we don't.
Throw him away.
So even if we put him in, put this 14-year-old in jail, he's charged as a juvenile. He'll get out when he's 21. His record is washed out. And so now we have this killer who at 14 viciously murdered someone. And he probably didn't get the rehabilitation that he needed. Right?
I agree.
Does that make sense?
Totally.
Or we put him in jail, give him a life sentence, which is probably going to be 25 years because I think it's illegal not to give kids. A juvenile tried as an adult, isn't it the law that they cannot be given life without parole? Isn't that how that goes?
No. Clinton Young. There's,
in some states it is.
Maybe.
I thought there was a state that did that.
It's the possibility of parole.
He'd get 25 years.
So they're not. That's when they come up for parole. So
that's what I meant.
Necessarily mean they get out. Yeah.
If he would serve life, life is usually 25 years before parole hits.
So he'd be 40.
So he would be around. Yeah.
And that's if he got out.
Which chances are spending 25 years in jail would turn him even into more hardened criminal is what I'm guessing. Because he's not going to get the help that he needs. I don't know. To me, it's like a lose-lose situation. Mm-hmm. Everybody's screwed.
Mm-hmm. And I agree.
Poor, poor Tristan Bailey's parents. And you know what? I feel bad for his parents, too. Really do.
Like you
I
said, everybody
lost. I
cannot
imagine having a son.
And they're at that age.
It is.
You're so young and you're so stupid. Like the choices you make. In 2 years, you make stupid choices at 14 and you think, oh, what was I thinking? And so I don't know brain is fully, their brain can even comprehend what they're doing or that death is permanent. It should. But I'm
I
not,
think at 14, they know. At 14, they know.
I think they do, but I think they don't understand the ramifications. Like, if you do this, you are going to go to prison. You're going to be a little boy in prison with very, very hardened criminals that they're going to eat him alive. I mean, he'll be separated till he's 18, I believe. Criminals always say, or people that go to jail, that they kind of, their growth is stunted when they go in because that's the age they went in. And you don't grow. You don't grow as a person. So at 14, even at 18, he's probably still going to be pretty much 14 years old. So it's horrible, horrible. And I always wonder, didn't he see the signs? There had to be signs. I don't believe that a kid just wakes up and decides he's going to kill people. There has to be something going
on. Well, he told a bunch of friends that he wanted to do it. And none of his friends told anybody. You know, and as we've learned, a lot of these school shooters, they've told people and those people never have spoken out. And I said anything.
They just don't believe that the person's really going to do it.
I guess. But I mean, rather, I wouldn't believe if
you got to err on the side of caution, though. You never
act
know.
On it. Then
all the school shooters, too, for the most part, everyone said they were off. That there was something off. They were kind of an odd kid. So if an odd kid is saying something that they're going to do something like that, you would think that they would tell somebody, their parents at least, tell somebody.
This ABC article, it says that the state's attorney's office said the decision was made to charge him as an adult was given because of the brutality.
Hmm.
So, and the poor girl, her body was found on Mother's Day.
That's terrible. There's no words. How could you? I don't think I could ever come back from that, ever.
Yeah. And the attorney said it brings me no pleasure in charging a 14-year-old as an adult with first-degree murder. It's clear to us that after we look at what happened, it was not only appropriate to charge the defendant as an adult, but it was really the only charge we could make.
Yeah.
It's just...
Yeah.
And then they don't know his plea, but yet they found his DNA all over her body, and they found her DNA on his shoes, on the knife, and a shirt that they found in his bedroom.
I mean, he smiled and Snapchatted him in the back
open.
Of the police car.
I know.
He would be
give
best
peace
served.
Cars? Yeah, it'd be even peace signs.
To say I'm guilty, save the taxpayers' money, save the poor family the hardship of the trial. Just do one good thing in your life, buddy, and just go to jail quietly.
Yep, he was given a lawyer. The court appointed him a lawyer, and he's in jail without bond right now. It'd be almost better to put him into some kind of criminal mental facility.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And study them. And they may. They may. But, you know, that's not really like...
Because there's something obvious. There's some wires that are obviously not meeting in his brain.
Obviously.
Or they should be. Or their wires are crossed or something.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So, I don't know. It's just, awful. It's heartbreaking just... all around.
Ooh, gives me the willies. On that note, wow. Okay.
I know. But that's anyway all I got. I hope everybody has a great week.
Yep. I hope everybody had a nice Memorial Day. I forgot that. I didn't even know it was Memorial Day weekend. True. I didn't even know it was a holiday. I have a little bit of stuff going on in my life. It just seemed like another weekend to me. Swear to goodness, until somebody said something about everybody being closed Monday. I'm like, why in the world is everybody closed Monday? It's a holiday. What?
Gotcha.
Blinders. Gotcha. Blinders, Jen. Blinders on my eyes. Boop, just going forward. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, you do. Understand that.
All right, Jen. Hey, but guess what? Until next time, remember, lock your doors.
Keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all Our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Vane. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.
You're my best friend, the backyard again.
The fitness craze. Jane Fonda. He opened his own gym.
Jazzercise.
Yep, lay down. No barking. It's just a noise. It doesn't shock her.
No, I know.
But I wouldn't do
that.
We
had one for Reggie.
Do they work?
Reggie doesn't bark that often, does he?
Oh, that's pretty good, yeah. All right, come here, Goofy. Lay down. She laid on top of me all morning. Maybe that's the problem. Lay down. So she's, like, laid out. You know what I'm saying? Okay, sorry. Mm-hmm. Well, as I'm reading that just reminded me of the end of Soap. Remember the Soap?
Oh, yeah. I used to love that show.
Oh, my God, me too. Did Benson finally have enough? Right. Mm-hmm. Investigators began to work the case and learned from, sealed up like socks and she's tossing it around like it's dead and it flung up and hit me on the face on the computer. So I had to move it. Sorry. After 4 weeks, Sorry. Bill Bagano. Oh my God. I never want to say that name and I used to love it because I thought it was fun to say.